I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could have me 5 mil a year, I wouldn't go.
It's Tommy Moe!
Robbie Weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your Monday episode of Rugby Weekly Extra. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're going to look back over it in a rugby context. Three of the four provinces progress in Europe. Joining us to chat about all of those games and more is Murray Kinsella of the42.ie. Good morning, Murray. How are you?
I'm great, Gav. Had a day trip over to Northampton yesterday, so it was in and out. A bit of a long day, but always pleasant travelling with the Munster fans who had a kind of familiar story, I suppose. Different circumstances, as we'll get into, but they go home with a European defeat in the round of 16 for the second season in a row. Lovely stadium over there, 15,000. It's a nice size. The Saints fans were really good. They were really excited, I think, by having Munster there, and they were impressed by the travelling support. So it was a really cool European day. And for, 40 minutes at least, it was a sensational game. Second half, it did slow down a bit, but it was really watchable, and I have to say I really enjoyed it. And across the board, it was a great weekend of rugby.
They seem like two clubs who are actually relatively fond of each other, Mer, don't they? Munster and Northampton. As in, it's understandably sold as a rivalry because of 2000 and because of like some great meetings in the past. But I never get the impression that there's like real animosity between the two teams. It's kind of like there's a little bit of a grow for each other behind the scenes.
There's a bit of similarity, isn't there? There is a bit of similarity, yeah.
Yeah, there is. And they both had great days, and they both had trying times as well. And in fairness, Northampton, I know Chris Boyd probably set the foundations, but they look to be in a really good place. Some really good young players, really interesting. I just felt that opening, in the opening onslaught from Munster, I thought their defence was really, really strong, and just the ability out of one every three or four phases for somebody to make a big hit and just kill momentum. That's what stood out to me in that first 4 or 5 minutes, was just they had players who could actually were more powerful than Munster. And I think that was, that, you know, Munster obviously eventually scored, but I thought during the game that was the most obvious point of difference, was that Northampton had a lot more power available to them. And it's really interesting, the pre-season, they went a little bit different this year. They did way less running, did a massive gym block, and put power and size onto their players, and sacrificed potentially some aerobic and anaerobic gains. And even Finn Smith spoke afterwards about how they feel. They really feel powerful, but they certainly played powerful, which is the most important thing. But I think sometimes if you feel it, you will play it. Obviously, you have to have a certain amount of athleticism, and they do, and even off the bench, they brought that on. But just the way they want to play the game, some of the young players are bringing through their academy, and some of the players have come through their academy and are now playing for England. Obviously, they're going to lose Courtney Laws, but I think they're in a good place. And, you know, you're over there, Murray. It's a rugby town, and it's a great little stadium. And, you know, if professional rugby is to be viable anywhere, you would say, you know, clubs like Northampton should be able to do it.
So keen was he to dive into the rugby chat. I didn't get a chance to introduce Bernard Jackman there, but I know you know who it was. Birch, let's continue with that, because we might as well dive into that Munster game. So you mentioned that defensive stand in the first 5 minutes kind of set a tone a little bit, and it kind of, that's the way the game ultimately played out, particularly in the final quarter, where Munster didn't have the kind of quality to bring off their bench that even Northampton had, and just ran into a brick wall. Like, they didn't score in the second half. And not only did Northampton look just physically stronger, if you look at even their back three, like, they just looked faster. We kind of don't really talk about back lines in this context, but Munster's back line isn't especially fast. Like, their hands are fast, but in terms of foot speed, like, Zeebo is pushing into his mid-30s. He's still got probably a nice 15-yard burst, but he's not going to take one to the house from halfway anymore. And Sean O'Brien's more of a power wing. He's more of a centre in reality. Even Shane Daly, when he's fit, like, it's probably what holds him back from being a test player. Really nice footballer, lovely hands, but just doesn't have that top-line speed and doesn't have the size, say, of a James Lowe to make up for that. And, like, I guess when I look at the result and the way things played out in the second half, this, to me, was indicative of just where Munster are at the moment. And I know people will make the point, well, you're missing Snyman, you're missing a Dogbo, you're missing Klein, you're missing Dave Kilcoyne, all of these power athletes, but like, you're never going to be at full strength either. Like, that's a dream, really. Like, but in a contact sport like rugby, you're going to be missing four or five guys at all times. And once we're just in a situation where they don't have the depth, I guess, to make up for the losses of more than four or five that they're missing at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, you mentioned the backs not having real out and out speed, but also I think, like, up in the front row, you know, I just think they're lacking a little bit of power there and punch and art. Look, it's very hard to expect anything more from the likes of Scanlon and Archer, who put in big shifts. But the reality is, the game now is very much based around being able to win collisions, and unfortunately, particularly as they went past into the second half when they tired a little bit, it was harder for them to do that. So that's the reality of it. I think that's where Munster are. That's their weakness, and yeah, they've got a lovely game plan, a lovely way of playing. The effort yesterday was beyond question. You know what I mean? Like, they really found a huge amount of energy and passion to try and get a big scalp in Europe. But just unfortunately, if the other team performs, you know, and they have more power and more pace, it's very difficult. And I think we saw that yesterday. You know, there wasn't anything really you could point a finger at and blame people. It's just, you know, they have a few injuries, they don't have enough depth, and they are lacking a little bit of athleticism. And some of the players you mentioned, yeah, for sure, you know, they would have helped if they weren't injured, but you do need to have reserves who have that as well. And at the moment, that's probably where Rountree and Prendergast and Leamy, etc., will be looking to see, well, what's coming over the next couple of years and what can they bring in. And it's complicated because, you know, we're led to believe that there's not a huge amount of money in the bank. The Antoine Frisch situation is up in the air. You know, I know he's contracted to be a Munster player, but certainly it seems as if there's some clubs in England, in France, who are circling. The rumour is Munster have asked for $500,000 transfer fee, which would be great because obviously they would have his salary plus a transfer fee. But again, the problem is the French clubs aren't stupid. They'll know that the longer this goes on, the weaker Munster's hand is. And the big thing is the player. I mean, if Antoine Frisch really wants to leave this summer, he will leave. You know, and that's the unfortunate thing for clubs. You know, if you get rid of a coach or get rid of a player, you know, you'll pretty much have to pay most of their contract. Whereas if a player wants to leave or a coach wants to leave for personal reasons, it's very, very difficult to enforce that. And so it's just it's a game of poker at the moment. I think because, you know, and I'm a bit disappointed in making that statement this week, last week. You know, I just felt, you know, that can be a conversation with the board, that can be a conversation with Graham Rountree, and shouldn't have really been announced the week of the European game. And I know the counter argument is there's no good week. A URC game is just as important, but I just felt, you know, it was probably bad timing as well from him. It could have been handled a bit better.
Murray, adding to all of that, there was a bug searing through the squad, which probably weakened Munster on the day. And as Bert says, you couldn't question their endeavour. Like, they absolutely tore into it. They just ran out of steam, ran out of quality, as we say. Like, Tadhg Byrne was sick, by all accounts, when you spoke to him afterwards, as in audibly and possibly conspicuously sick. And he went to gargantuan sort of territory with his performance. When you say that it felt like a familiar day for Munster fans and yet a little bit different, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean the bug, obviously. It's a pretty unique circumstance. And yeah, Tadhg Byrne was in a bad way. Obviously, you're always very fatigued, especially when you play like he did. But yeah, he looked awful, to be honest. Craig Casey spewed on the pitch just when they came back out for halftime, and apparently was in a really bad way all week as well. And a number of them were. I think you could probably pick out the ones who were, quite a few guys who were just looking pale and lacking in energy. So that was a factor, absolutely. It didn't help, especially when they had that injury list. Like, and I do think that if they'd had even a handful of those guys, particularly given that they were powerful, a lot of the guys in the injury list, Snyman, Klein, there's your first choice second rows probably, your first choice Tucker, Dearmer Barron, your first choice tight head, Ollie Yeager, your first choice right wing, Calvin Ash, first choice left wing, Shane Daly, Adogbo probably would have been in the mix. Sal Noah if he's fit. But yeah, you're right. You're going to have injuries. I do think that is a very crippling extreme injury list for a squad that we know just isn't deep as others are. So that is a factor as well. But I think the way in which you have to just judge the game as it was, the way they lost it did feel familiar in terms of their errors allowing Northampton to take full advantage. And they're kind of opening, 12, 13 minutes is a good example of that, because Munster start with real punch and energy. And I thought it was brilliant defence in many instances. Lewis Ludlam gets a turnover early. He holds up John Hodden over the try line. A brilliant bit of play where Hodnett is probably not actually trying to go over the line himself in the end. He's trying to probably get to ground so they can recycle. And Ludlam actually just pulls him over the line and he's underneath him and he holds him up. It's excellent defence. And then there's a couple of Munster errors. Mike Haley knocks on a ball that he'll catch 99 times out of 100. And then Jack Crowley has the error where the long box kick goes over his head. And it's a tricky one, all right? He tries to control it with his foot. It rolls into the in goal and suddenly he's turning around and he's carried it into the 22 and he kicks clear and it's a 5 metre line out and Saints score from there. So two Munster errors back to back. And then there's another miss after that, isn't there? Where Munster get back into the 22 again. And that was a familiar story for me. Munster used to be so ruthless in the opposition 22. That was kind of their calling card, but that's faded out a little bit this season. Even in this game, they had 10 visits and they get the two tries. You know, they left empty-handed too often in this game. And I think at halftime, when it was 14-14, I was thinking, this is actually a good position, but Munster probably actually needed to be edging ahead, knowing as we do that their 23, with all those injuries, with the illness as well, wasn't as strong as the Saints 6-2 bench. And they couldn't get ahead in the third quarter. They ended up having to come up with some massive defensive plays. O'Mahony steals a line out. Byrne gets a turnover. But they botched those two attacking lineouts they got in that period. And it's not much opportunity, but they really needed a return from there. And then familiar in the sense that they fade out in the final quarter. It's been the story of their season. And absolutely injuries have been part of that. I mean, they had an even greater injury crisis earlier this season around winter, but they just haven't had the punch. And even when there have been fewer injuries, you kind of feel like Munster are hoping maybe not to have to use their bench until the very, very end, or not at all in some cases. So that depth is an issue. And I suppose the big worry in that regard is you look at what's happening in terms of movement this summer, and they're probably going to have a weaker squad next season overall. We can maybe go through that, but they are strapped financially like they are. Last financial year, the RFU essentially converted 4 million of Munster's operational debt into a long-term loan, along with what they still owe on Thoma Park. So that probably explains where they have been and where they are financially. They've been encouraged and directed to reduce their budget, what they're spending on players. So yeah, that's it. That is a worry. But at the same time, there's talent emerging from their own kind of pipelines. And that definitely, speaking to supporters yesterday, that definitely gives a lot of people a lot of hope that the homegrown element can come through. But I think you're so right. The round of 16 is Munster's level at the moment. They lost in the round of 16 last season. This is, overall, it's just not a good Champions Cup campaign. They were top seeds in the pool and they didn't do a good job of it. They collapsed against Exeter away. They drew at home to Bayonne when Bayonne didn't even have all their frontliners, and that was a really big miss, wasn't it? It was a bad day for the team. I don't know what happened, whether they got their mental approach wrong, but it was a bad one, and lost at home to Northampton. There was a great performance in Toulon, but that's not enough at this level. And based on the evidence of recent seasons, Munster, they're just not in that bracket of being close to contenders yet.
The question you received about some of their outgoings in the summer, Mer, does that person wish to remain anonymous?
It is an anonymous message, yes.
Okay, well, here it was. Question for you and the lads tomorrow. This person said to Murray, with the likes of Archer, Carberry, Cronin, Kilcoyne, Knox, Chris Moore, Snyman, Zeebo, rumoured or confirmed to be gone this summer, and just Dermot Kilgallen and Billy Burns in. How are Munster ever going to compete at Champions Cup level again?
Yeah, it's a big one. I think it's going to be a few years, certainly, before they can get to that level, and it's probably bridging the gap. It is a big changing in the guard, and we've spoken about this, that's happening under Rowntree, and he probably saw that straight away when he came in, that the likes of, I know Murray signed on for another year, but him, O'Mahony, Archer, Zeebo, Kilcoyne, all these guys are into their mid-30s and heading towards the kind of twilight of their careers. And some of those guys are going to leave this summer. We know Snyman's going, Carberry's going, Frisch, I think we're pretty sure now, is going to be going as well. That's a big chunk of your squad. And to only have two confirmed incomings, it does cause a little bit of worry. I suppose how they're going to compete is that the new core of the squad is going to drive to that level. Like who is going to be the heartbeat of the team? It's Casey, Crowley, Coombs, Calvin Nash, all your mid-20s guys. And then the crop of youngsters like Brian Gleeson, Ruan Quinn, Idogbo, these guys to hopefully get to that level. But like the glaring thing again, as always, every review we do at Munster at the end of a campaign, it comes back to that front row. And they just need a bit of oomph there. Because the teams who win competitions, they have that. They have it in the starting team and they have it on the bench. And I think Jaeger's been a good addition, unlucky with injury again, but they probably need a bit more there. And as Bert says, if they get a bit of cash for Frisch, it just has to go straight there. Don't sign another centre again. Just don't. Don't sign an expensive outside back. Just get a loose head or a big massive hooker to complement and improve what you already have there.
Yeah, fast track Gene O'Leary Kareem from Prez there, from their senior cup team. Stick him in at 13. Build for the future, but bring in a test tight head perhaps. Birch, it is an interesting question from our anonymous contributor, in the sense that, like, just by sheer maths alone, the number of senior players you're losing versus the number you're bringing in, like, it just feels like it would be a shallower squad at least next season. And you wonder, with the Roundtree era, one which has yielded a trophy ahead of schedule, as we've said countless times, like, does next year become almost the start of a new transition? Does this thing get extended per se, in that, like, you have to take an even longer term view of it than Munster fans might have a couple of years ago when Roundtree actually took the top gig?
Yeah, it's hard because I think having that URC success year one has kind of heightened the expectation, and I think now we're going to have to see, it sounds stupid, but I think this next year could be year one, if that makes sense. Realistically, if, like, I don't want to be bursting the bubble of anybody, but if you think about it, like, realistically, so you save money on Killer, you save money on RG, obviously a significant amount of money on RG, you save money on Joey, even though Billy Burns is coming in, you're still saving money there. You'll save money on Zeebo, you'd save a bit of money on Knox, he wouldn't have been a big earner, and you'd save money on Frisch. But you lose, you basically, Connor and Peter, if Peter gets signed, are effectively going from being players you already had for free and to now being part of your squad, if you understand. So there's probably not a huge amount of money floating around. And then the non-Irish qualified one, so John Klein is obviously non-Irish qualified. I'm not really sure about the status of Nankivell. I know, like, is he a project player? Is that even a thing anymore? I think, you know, or is he NIQ until he qualifies? I think there's probably a little bit of... It'll be interesting how Humphreys treats all this compared to, obviously, Nustafora. And I know their academy's got some really good players, and Murray's mentioned them already. But, God, I think they're going to have to go outside of Ireland to... if they want to be realistically challenging for Europe, it's very hard to see those players that Murray mentioned within one season being able to beat the likes of Leinster, Bordeaux, La Rochelle. I think, you know, so it's going to be massively important how they recruit there. You know, you mentioned a big tight head. I'd say they probably need a hooker or a loose head just as much, you know what I mean? And
I think that's maybe what I said.
Archer go.
No, sorry, yeah. That was me.
Gav said tight head, sorry. No, and like, just the reason I'm saying that is it's probably not, like, Leinster looking for one as well. There's not many on the market at the moment. And likewise, there's not many superstar loose heads or hookers available. So it's very frustrating, I think, if you're a Munster fan, because there's not really anyone to blame, I don't think. Or sorry, I don't need any blame with the current players or management. This is effectively poor succession planning over the last 5 or 6 years, or poor player development. Like, I don't think you could accuse this management of not developing players. I think they have. But unfortunately, there was the previous regime. it was quite stagnant, I think, you know, and there was, you know, there's been changes made at academy level because they weren't happy with that and all that stuff. So I'm not pointing a finger at anybody, but just there has been a bit of it's starting to turn. But now, unfortunately, if your older players kind of all leaving at the same time or about to leave over the next year or two, and just there hasn't been that clarity around players pushing through. But I still have faith in some of those youngsters. I have faith in Odogbo, faith in Tom O'Hearn, faith in Kendallan, etc., Gleeson. It's just, unfortunately, they're probably not at the 24, 25 age where they're really proven in Europe, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, what do you guys think about it? Like, do you think it's... would you agree that it's another transition? It's another project starting effectively again?
The process, yeah, is underway, I think, as I mentioned. But it's... Yeah, it's, I suppose, yet to take a kind of solidified course. And as those veteran players I mentioned in particular, they're kind of still hanging around. And even still, it sounds like there's still a bit of uncertainty. You hear Killer's definitely leaving, then he might be staying, that... You know, they're kind of to-ing and fro-ing with different bits of that. And yeah, it is kind of scary to just let those guys who've become centurions, even double centurions in some cases, just go. And then you're into a situation where you don't have that experience to call on and that nous to call on. But I guess the thing with Munster is, until last season, that squad of players hadn't had massive success. So, you know, you know, going with that new crop who are very ambitious and who are very... ambitious to be the ones kind of in control of the squad, from what I understand, it kind of makes sense. But yeah, your hands are tied a little bit with the financial side of it, and it will be interesting to see Birch how Humphreys views all of it and whether he's more willing to allow, you know, say two NIQ players in one position or whatever it might be. Because
yeah,
like the bare facts of this Champions Cup campaign, Leinster are the sole Irish team into the quarterfinals again, and Munster, Connacht, and Ulster had three wins between them in 13 games, which is just not good. And I know it's after a World Cup, and I never want to read too much into a single season. These things can change. They really can. But it's unsatisfying, and you'd have to say that those three teams were, like, they were well off the pace of Leinster and actually another kind of crop of clubs. It feels like they're quite a bit below that tier. Or rather that they have to kind of be out of their skins with good luck on the injury front to be competitive. You know, I think they need a lot of things to go their way. So, yeah, that was pretty stark for me when I went back through looking at all the results, and you think, God, that's not great for Irish rugby to be losing that many games in the Champions Cup.
And Justin Murray, I think that's you're spot on there. We have dropped off collectively, bar Leinster. The others have dropped away, and. You know, doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon. Obviously, Ulster might get a kick with a new coach, but you still look at that squad and you go, are they really at the top table in the Champions Cup? But I think it's really important that we don't get carried away by Challenge Cup runs. It'll be great for Ulster or Connacht to win a trophy, but, you know, the French, if you just take the European Cup, is where I think the four Irish provinces should be. Where we want to get to is where the four of them are genuine contenders in the Champions Cup. That's effectively, you know, the ambition that we should have. This weekend, three of the four French teams won their Champions Cup games. And the one who lost to a French team, so Racing lost to Stade Toulouse. And then in the Challenge Cup, only one out of five won, okay? And that was Clermont, and they played Zebre at home. They had no interest. Like, they had very little interest in the Challenge Cup. If those French teams wanted to win the Challenge Cup, if it was sought after, and you can see the crowd in Pau, you can see the crowd in Montpellier, it's just not really something that catches the imagination of players or coaches. So again, if we end up with a team in the Challenge Cup final or semi-finalists, don't think that everything is right and vibrant in Irish provincial rugby. We are getting... we have to be very careful we don't get left behind, you know, at the top level. Obviously, URC, we probably could still end up with three out of four teams in the top eight, hopefully four out of eight, but it's where Champions Cup is where we should be judging ourselves at a provincial level.
Yeah, Lyon lost, I suppose, in the Champions Cup as well, but they didn't take it seriously either, like your point stands.
No.
Just to go back to what you were saying about Nankivell there, Birch, before we move on from Munster, you're saying you don't know the status of him in terms of whether he's seen as a project player, as in after 5 years he would qualify for Ireland through citizenship.
Yeah, so in the old days, there was a little bit, you were allowed to have a couple of project players, and obviously since that went from 3 to 5, it's harder to do it. You know, it's harder to do it, to be able to justifiably say, because players aren't contracted for 5 years. And, you know, if he was considered a project player as such, it would mean that John Klein, if I'm right, is the only non-Irish qualified. So it gives them a little bit more leeway. Or would Humphreys allow them to go and find, you know, a young hooker who's another project player, you know what I mean, who technically isn't Irish qualified yet, but is 21, 22. So, you know, he could be at Gibson Park or whatever, where, you know, you still get a lot out of him, or Bundy Aki. That's what I suppose. I think they're going to need a little bit of help. They're going to need a little bit of help from the RFU to potentially, like, accelerate the whole team. But just, I don't, if they're not given help, it's really going to be difficult if you bounce up into the top teams in Europe.
And they have, like, we should say they have been given help. As yeah. I mentioned, they you know, they got that financial, I suppose, boost, if you can call it that, last season, and being able to sign Ollie Yeager in the middle of a season, which is a bit unusual, and other things like that. So the IRFU price, think, you know, we have actually given these guys a boost up. As you say, Birch, it probably hasn't been run perfectly for a longer kind of period, and sometimes that comes home to roost. But yeah, at the same time, I think Munster fans just think, can we get a bit of luck? Can you give us a break? It's just bizarre, isn't it? They seem to be cursed. You know, all the injuries, the Frisch situation, John Ryan ban, all this stuff happening at the same time, and then there's a bug on top of it. They just, yeah, misery seems to be the way of life with this Munster team.
They won a trophy at the end of last season, to be fair.
I know, but yeah. I know, but it's just, there's always something, isn't there?
Big drama show for sure. I guess, like, I misspoke when I said they should bring in a tight end. Obviously, Ollie Yeager being there changes that picture. Hooker and Lou said it would be more pertinent or more pressing concerns of theirs. But Birch, you know, I'd imagine it was frustrating for a lot of Munster fans watching how good James Cronin was for Leicester Tigers as they really pitched up at the Aviva Stadium against Leinster. And look, Leinster win the game kind of comfortably in the end. But it's kind of a curious game where they have less possession, a lot less territory than Tigers, and yet are convincing in terms of the scoreline at the end. I'm curious, firstly, as to what you made of that Leinster performance and that victory.
Some really good stuff, and very similar to the Bulls. Leinster have changed, and it's not as obvious in the last couple of games, but they're way more comfortable without the ball. And they're actually very good at scoring tries very quickly and very early in their phase. In their phase count, and like that's different than it was under Lancaster. I felt under Lancaster, they would just wear you down with their possession, and eventually an opportunity would open up. Whereas, from my eyes anyway, it's an ability to turn over, transition play. Obviously, they got a great try from a line out launch, Gibson Park's second, I think it was, but where McCarthy made a line break, but. It just, yeah, they're able to go fast and offload and find space and hurt teams very quickly. And then, obviously, they're very happy to defend. And they're actually happy enough to be in their own half as well. It's obviously not part of the plan, but they don't get stressed about it. And I think their mindset is that the opposition are kind of using a lot of energy, attacking, and they're reasonably comfortable. Now, their defence was far from perfect. And I think there will be a few things they need to fix this weekend, because Leicester did ask questions of them on counter-attack, but also off set-piece launch. But in general, I never really felt Leinster were going to lose that game in mid-game. I didn't feel it going into the stadium, and I didn't feel it during the game either, even though I thought Leicester played quite well. And I thought it was a decent match, to be honest. And I think it's far better for Leinster to be going in with areas to fix this weekend. And obviously, you know, there's going to be no complacency involved in La Rochelle. But just, there is things they need to fix, and they need to fix them this week. And I think they can fix them, but I think they're in an okay place.
It feels like they're being economical, Murray. And like Birch mentions, the expense of energy there, if that's the word, expense, but you know, like the use of energy. And honestly, a lot of this feels like, I guess, like energy conservation when you watch Leinster, maybe even in a longer term sense. It feels like they're not probably like obviously they're giving 100%. I find this hard to kind of articulate, but basically like that they're playing within themselves to a certain degree. As Birch says, like they can go from A to Z really quickly and score, but then as he says, they're happy enough to just hang around in their own half, soak pressure. Saw it at the end of the Zebre game. We've seen it a lot of times, even the Thoma Park game over Christmas, just closing the game out without overexerting themselves. And then you, I guess if that is a deliberate ploy, it's about games like this one on Saturday against La Rochelle and just having more in the tank for a massive challenge like that. Do you see this Leinster team as being like right on course to where they want to get to with the input of Jacques Nienaber? Or did you look at that Leicester game, 14-point game, but the concession of 3 tries as being like slightly underwhelming for this stage of the season?
Well, I have the same sense as you're alluding to there at the start, but the proof will be in the pudding this weekend. I think there was good stuff, some really good stuff again in this Leinster performance, and some lulls. They actually were ultra clinical. They had 7 visits to 22. They score the, is it 6 tries or 5 tries?
5,
they're actually really good at converting when they get down there. And on the flip side, they had 13 defensive sets in their 22. And I know they concede 3 tries. They won't be happy with that. But they had some big moments. And they feel more like a big moments team rather than a team who just wants to control the whole 80. And the rhythm of their season, I think, has been a little bit more looking like a side who want to peak at the right time. And it all feels a bit Springsbok-y, doesn't it? That's how the Springboks operate. They do enough and they try certain things and they change up their squad selection and they tip along nicely and they do enough good stuff to get into good positions. And when they get there, they go. And I mean, Jack Conan, after the Bulls game, he was doing his interview and he mentioned the next 2 weeks. So clearly they'd already been planning and talking about La Rochelle and I would imagine getting into really good detail with Nienaber. And I would just love to be in some of the meetings this week, because one of the things I got wrong about Nienaber at first, I used to think he was kind of like the, almost like the softer side. Rassi was the mad fella who'd rally the troops. But Nienaber is vicious and ruthless. And actually, he said one of the things that surprised the Leinster players most is just how much he curses when he's telling them to effing man up and go after people and effing hurt people, all this kind of stuff. He's really brutal with his messages, which I think is surprising, that it's been as much about that mentality and that mindset and being the best player on the big day as much as the really important technical stuff. So I really would love to see how he riles them this week, what clips he uses of them against La Rochelle in the last couple of years and where they came up short. I think it would be a fascinating fly on the wall experience. Pity they're not doing a behind the scenes documentary. But on the whole, I think they've tipped along nicely. And actually, funnily enough, bang on schedule, it's 14 weeks since Nienaber came. He's promised us the defence in 14 weeks would be good to go. So let's see it this weekend. He's really confident that it's ready. That's ready to shut this La Rochelle team down. And I'm so excited by this game of rugby. I know we've seen it now. La Rochelle have beaten them in 2 finals, a semi-final. Now they get the chance to beat them on their home patch in a quarter-final. But, I mean, there's no excuses for Leinster not to be, I think, peaking. Everything's just been built around this and it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's game week 12 though, right? So it's week 14, but game week 12. And when he made that point in January, he was talking about the number of games with South Africa, that it took 14 games with them, and then therefore it'll take 14 weeks with Leinster. So I think he has another fortnight to play with, even if this goes well on Saturday. We'll have to ask him for clarification on that. But either way, like I guess, Birch, as you said, like there are aspects of their defensive performance from the weekend just gone that they would be unhappy with, but like I think equally it was probably a little bit of a difficult game to prepare for psychologically for those Leinster players, because you're playing against it, I would say, an average enough Leicester team. They played very well at the weekend, but you know, a couple of people said to me, geez, you didn't really give Leicester enough credit on the podcast before the game. And I was like, we actually did. Like, you know, you can only base it on what you've seen of them so far. And like, they're probably outperforming that now. But equally, as Murray says there, when Conan alludes to sort of preparing for the next 2 weeks of Europe, like Leinster knew they were going to win that game. And it's tough then maybe to like completely blow away the opposition or properly catch the eye. But like, all of this conversation kind of boils down to this Saturday against La Rochelle. Like, this is an absolutely enormous game. I know Leinster fans feel the enormity of it, maybe because we're recording on a Monday morning. I haven't even had a chance really to get my head around this yet. Like, but it's going to be such a fun week and a massive build-up to, you know, a rematch between these arch nemesis, really. You have Rog taking La Rochelle down to Cork for the week, which is one of the funniest things imaginable to me. And I as Murray says, Birch, like, we'll learn pretty much everything about Leinster under Nabber on Saturday, right? Because we'll get into La Rochelle in a moment and how they got on against the Stormers. They weren't great either, but you know they're going to pitch up on Saturday. Like, it's going to be the defining game of Leinster's season, right?
Yeah, it's... Leinster can't lose this one. Like, they can lose it, obviously, in terms of the result, but... at what stage does it stop? You know what I mean? I know, but honestly, like, if these Leinster players, if they lose to La Rochelle again in a knockout game at home, with all the warning and with all the quality they've had and all the challenge that La Rochelle have had, obviously having to, you know, scrape through, go away and win in the last 16, the challenge of going back to back to back, which is incredibly difficult. If La Rochelle can achieve that, and they can achieve it, like, I've no doubt. I'm in massive awe of what La Rochelle have done and what they could do. But I just think, from a Leinster point of view, it has to stop here, you know, because they've, like, it's been a change of coach. You know, Nina Barr coming in, they've gone and got one of the best coaches in the world. They have the best resource. They're one of the best resource team in the world. They've got cohesion with Guy and Leo and all that stuff, an academy structure producing players, you know, so many internationals. Well, there's 6 internationals on the bench at the weekend. It's just, there can be no more, you know, we slipped up. They just have to do it. They just have to do it now. And that doesn't mean they will do it, but realistically, I think they'll be broken. I think La Rochelle could actually break Leinster if they take Europe away from this year. You know, if someone else takes it, if someone else beats them in a semi-final or final, it's not as bad, but to, it'd obviously be devastating. But to lose to the same team 4 times in a row in knockout rugby, I know they've beaten them in the group stages, but you need to knock them out. And La Rochelle haven't accepted being knocked out. They've come back and found a way to get back, so they'll be loving it, and they deserve to be loving it, because they're a phenomenal side and they've proven it. But I said it on RT after the match, I think unfortunately this week will be Rog will dominate the airwaves, because he's amazing at it, and Leo or Nina Barr will try, or maybe won't, but realistically, and we'll hype up the coaches, but effectively I think it's the players. So when La Rochelle have beaten Leinster in the past, it's been the skeletons, it's been the Aldreets, it's been the players who have performed, and it's been Leinster players who haven't performed, who haven't taken control of the game. Well, this week, you know, it's Caelan Doris's time, maybe it's Dan Sheehan's time, it's Robbie Henshaw's time, it's Hugo Keenan's time. They're the ones who are going to decide this game, you know what I mean? And that's what I think is going to be fascinating to see. How both teams go about it. There's no love lost. La Rochelle will be better for sure, because for them it'll be they love playing Leinster and have had great success. Some of their best days, I'd say, in a rugby jersey have been against Leinster. Not taking for granted what they've done international level, but some of their best memories as a group have been against Leinster, and they'll want to repeat that. But it's going to be phenomenal. I think Nina Barr could be the difference. I think he could be the difference. He's a winner. It's been an incredible journey for La Rochelle. They won't want to give it up, but how many teams... Has anyone done the treble in Europe? 3 in a row. It's insane to think that it could be done. And that's the opportunity for La Rochelle to go down in history even more so. But realistically, for Leinster... You look at, there's no excuse, really. You know, there's no excuse. This has to be it for them.
And yet, as you say, they might lose because La Rochelle are so good.
Oh yeah, I'm not. Sorry, just to be clear, don't quote me on this. I'm not saying that they can't lose. They can lose the match, 100%. But realistically, it's a fucking disaster if they do.
Yeah, but I suppose La Rochelle are on the other side of the coin, and they have so many qualities. And even though they, I suppose they laboured, and they were lucky, obviously, in Cape Town, and Manny Leibach could have won the game with the last kick of it. I thought you saw lots of the qualities in there even, and I don't think, the most impressive thing to me is that La Rochelle never, ever looked like they were mentally in trouble, or that they were panicky or losing their composure. I mean, they're 16-0 down in South Africa at one stage, and they just looked calm, and they just ground their way to a win. I think the first half was poor from them. They were playing into the wind, and their kicking was really poor. But at the same time, they probably should have had 6 points. Hastaway misses a kick into that wind, and then they kind of turned down a really central position where he normally would have kicked it, probably because of that wind. They were overplaying in the middle third, where they're uncharacteristically like forcing some wild offloads and going out the back door a lot, when you just think, go to the front door, because you've got Will Skelton running there and you've got Jonathan Donty running there. And in the second half, they narrowed up. I think they're at their absolute best when they play quite narrow. And even if the defence adjusts, they're just so powerful and big that they can get momentum there. And then the likes of Kerr Barlow, Aldrete, Skelton, they're really clever. They're obviously powerful, but they're really clever on those kind of scooting lines. Not just a pick and carry into the first defender, but pick and find a little chink in the defence. And Kerr Barlow scoots really well, and players play off him. And when they got on top of you, it's virtually impossible to stop that momentum. Their breakdown defence again was immense against the Stormers. And there's just such a variety of threats with Bottia and Donty and Aldrete and Skelton and a few others who contribute to that. So yeah, I think it was a reminder of their qualities and their set pieces. Again, they're going to be powerful and confident in that area, and big and tough to stop. I think James Ryan he'll be a miss if you look at it just in terms of his kind of manic edge. It was obvious when he went off in the final last season what Leinster lost, and what he had been bringing before that was almost crazed in its physicality, and it was really effective, and he was shutting down the likes of Skelton. So someone else has to fill those shoes and bring that edge, that kind of wildness to Leinster's play. But even though they had their struggles in South Africa, I think La Rochelle, especially in the last couple of months, it's been an up and down season, patchy definitely, but they've had a few performances where it's just so oppressive, and they're such a confident team. They are mentally, we know that it's a pure fact. We know that they're really strong mentally in the pressure moments of games, and that is a doubt around Leinster in that end game. When it comes down to the finest margins against a team as good as La Rochelle, Rodgers' team, they have that edge, don't they?
Let me veer into some dangerous territory, Birch, and start to write La Rochelle off. No, not really, but just why I think Leinster are absolutely favourites for this game, aside from the fact that La Rochelle are travelling up from Cape Town to begin with, aside from the fact that it's at the Aviva Stadium, where as much as La Rochelle won the final last year, it's still worth an extra couple of percent to the home team, I would say. I think La Rochelle's, a lot of their key players are of an age profile now where it's kind of difficult to make the case for them going back to back to back. And one of the areas where I would say Rog is less experienced than a lot of coaches is just that team cycle. And you know, cycling some of the older guys out and bringing in younger guys. He's starting to address it in the front row, obviously, with Louis Penverne and Alexander Kadoury. But like, massive part of that environment is obviously just loyalty and brotherhood, and you know, when that's the case, you're probably a little bit reluctant to let some of the older guys go again. So like, when we look at La Rochelle as having an up and down season and probably not being quite the force that they have been in previous seasons, that makes sense to me. Like, that's where they should be just based on their squad. And I don't think you can say the same for Leinster. Like I think when you can consider the travel and just the mileage on the team, and the fact that they've won two in a row, and just how difficult it is to get up for this again. Like, they will get up for it, but I just think Leinster have a significant edge in this personally, whereas in the past I would have said it was like a 50-50.
Yeah, I wouldn't be... Obviously, travel is a big thing, but those older players, until they let you down, until they can't win or find an extra performance level in a must-win game, I think Rog will trust them. But I can see why that would lead to some inconsistency issues. And, you know, obviously they had a poor start to the season, but that's logical enough when you think about miles on the clock, more players than ever, you know, playing for France or playing at the World Cup, Aldridge taking a break, which it could be their joker card, you know, it could, or their ace in the pack. It could be, the fact is, if he can now have a, not have to play, you know, for a couple of months, now start to lead and play with the vigor and performance levels that make him probably, you know, one of the best number eights in the world. Certainly, Caelan Doris is a Rolls Royce, but Caelan probably has to have, like, outplay Aldridge this weekend for Leinster to, you know, to win. And unfortunately, probably hasn't had those head-to-heads have only gone, from my memory, in the big ones, they've gone Aldridge's way. You know, so that's the challenge, and that's what Rog will hope. And this mini camp or whatever that they do in Cork, it'll all feed into this idea that they've gone commando style, they've come to Ireland, and they're getting ready. You know, they're getting ready and preparing in a way they've never prepared for before to beat Leinster. So I can see them getting right back up there. And the rebuilding the squad and all that stuff, yeah, that will happen. And that's the stuff, you know, we talk about with Munster maybe haven't done. And Rog and his team will be aware of that. But I wouldn't write those lads off until they've let La Rochelle down. And I don't think they've done that yet. I don't think they've done that yet, because this is what they're paid the big money to do, is to deliver on days like Saturday.
Yeah, they certainly delivered in the second half in Cape Town as well, led by Aldridge. They absolutely certainly do not win that game without him. Murd, just to chat a little bit about La Rochelle's prep, like the fact that they are coming to Ireland at all so early in the week and coming to Cork as well, like, it could transpire to be one of those mental master strokes by Rog that you talk about in the aftermath, because you know he's going to get them, like, he'll be explaining to the team a couple of weeks in advance, if we win, we're going to Cork, you know, my hometown, you'll meet my family, and we know how thematically important family is to that squad, and it's something a little bit different as well. As Birch says, it kind of feels like guerrilla tactics almost, and you also know that the people of Cork will get behind La Rochelle because of Rog, much in the same way as the people of Zaire got behind Muhammad Ali ahead of the Rumble in the Jungle, you know. So, like, they'll be well looked after. The red carpet will be rolled out for them. But, like, I'm just curious as to what you make of it in the context of coming back up from Cape Town. Like, you've had such a difficult time of travel. Would there be a case to have been made for just going back to La Rochelle for a couple of days and recuperating rather than going straight back into enemy territory per se in your opponent's home country?
Well, it's hilarious, isn't it? It's not really enemy territory. It's Leinster's enemy territory, and that makes it all the more comical and pointed. I think it makes sense, really. I mean, they had to fly up to Paris, and then they would have got on another flight back to La Rochelle or nearby, so why not just go straight over to Ireland and then settle in, and you shake off whatever fatigue and cobwebs you have probably today. Just get it out of your system, the travel. And go for I guess this would be a lightish week for most teams anyway, given you've played a big, tough European club game and you've got to refresh before another big one. It's so quick this time, and that's a little bit unusual. But yeah, it makes sense to me. I just emailed La Rochelle this morning to see what the story is. I'd imagine if they do media in person, everyone's going to be there. And as Birch said, Ron O'Gara is gold for the media. He often has things to say, and quite pointed things to say even, and clearly is happy to use the media to get some of those messages out. So be interested to see what happens in that regard. I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise to see some funny photos of the lads around Cork, the real capital, enjoying it and discovering the lights of it. It's a lovely place to set up for the week, and as you say, fresh and new for the players. So yeah, I actually think they'll be in good nick, and I think similarly to Leinster, they'll have felt this game was coming. I remember being over there when Leinster won the pool game, which is, it was a pool game, I know, but it was relevant, and it'll definitely give Leinster a confidence that they can match. And indeed, that day they kind of overcame the power, and they got the edge in that area. But even after the game, you know, La Rochelle were in trouble, but you could see there was a confidence there that O'Gara had a good sense that they would recover and get into knockout stages and maybe face Leinster again. And lo and behold, here it is. So yeah, I'm intrigued to see what he has to say this week.
He knew at the time that Aldridge would be back, for one thing, which would have been a comfort, Birch. Do you think the decisive factors or factor in this game is simply individual matchups then, or like what you mentioned about, say, Doris versus Aldridge, or where are the areas in which Leinster or La Rochelle will actually win this game the fifth time around?
Well, look, unfortunately, there's still a fear that Leinster and Ireland do struggle against power. And I even heard Dan Biggar speak about it yesterday when he was working for TNT. You know, that's out there, and maybe it's false, but you know, he referenced England beating Ireland. La Rochelle in the past, even Leicester at times seem to have more power than Leinster. You know, at times when they brought that power game, they made Leinster look human. So this is the test. This is the ultimate test, and that's why even that group game, La Rochelle weren't on form. Leinster had to win. You know, like they had to win away. The game was incredibly tight. It was incredibly tight. So that power does take away a lot of Leinster's. Or sorry, that power historically has taken away a lot of Leinster's X factor and flair, and it's become a battle. It's become a battle, and that's. Leinster can't run away from that. They're going to have to win those battles this weekend. And to win them, you know, I think they need four or five players having worldlies, having big games. And unfortunately, I look back at the semi-final that they lost during COVID, and I look back at the two finals. The best players on the field were wearing La Rochelle jerseys in all three games. In all three games. And nearly double the amount of Leinster players who really could go into the dressing room and say, well, I had a 9 out of 10 or I had a 10 out of 10. Not that it would matter to them, because it's the collective is important, but that's where it went. That's where they lost it. You know what I mean? Like, for sure, Leinster, and I'm watching Chasing the Sun, and, you know, Razzie before the Ireland game was talking about, oh, they think they're so smart. They think they're so smart and so technical and all this stuff. And we do think we're really smart and really technical. But the reality is that we haven't been outsmarted by La Rochelle. Leinster haven't. Ireland, you know, against England weren't necessarily outsmarted. It was literally an inability to deal with a team who were able to bully us into collision and squeeze us. And until we start to do that on a regular basis, until we match our intelligence, sounds fucking ridiculous, but like our interest in how to play the game, with that beast mode, with that animalistic aggression that you need, and do it and beat them, not just La Rochelle but other big teams, there's always going to be that doubt, because that's there now. And maybe the players will tell you, oh, it's bullshit, like, we just got beaten, we haven't performed, blah 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 blah, and that's fine. That's their, that they're totally right to that opinion. My opinion is, until we start to prove on a regular basis that we can beat these big physical aggressive teams, there has to be a doubt there. Has to be that. And the other doubt, and this is, again, Leinster players won't like me saying this, and Leinster fans might neither, but the reality is, until this team you know, become better at winning silverware, or closing out games, or come from behind to win in the last 10 minutes, there's that doubt there as well. You know, even go back to the URC final, I know a semi-final, it wasn't Leinster's full strength team, but they lost the game when it was there to be won. And to be fair to the other three losses to La Rochelle, all those matches were there to be won. They were there to be won. You know, and that's not taken from La Rochelle. La Rochelle did win it. But that's what this group have to do. They have to show that they can win games that are just in the balance.
Well, like, what you're saying about the physicality of the Airbridge and it being a concern, like, Biggar's point was that, I guess, if you can match or better Ireland's power and intensity on the day, you have a chance. But sure, that's applicable to anybody. Like,
yeah.
Like, Ireland, if you look at their games against power teams over the last couple of years, they've beaten South Africa twice, they've beaten France twice. Mm,
yeah.
What, are you discounting that?
No, we have beaten them, but, like, this, you know, the South Africa match in the World Cup, we managed to win it, but fuck, like, you couldn't say that we were able to play our game. Do you know what I mean? Like, at first, we did win it, and we beat France. We beat France. I agree with you, but it's still the pretend. Like, look, it's not rocket. It's nearly every. It's, you play a schools match next week, you're talking about the same stuff. So it's not an inherent weakness in Ireland, but that's the teams that give us the most trouble. You know what I mean? It's not a team who are more skillful, faster, play high tempo. It's not a team who basically are obsessed about kicking that you're really worried about anymore. You know, it's that's the one. And again, like I said, this is rugby. It hasn't changed in 100 years. But until we are able to beat them on a consistent basis, I still think there was elements of the All Blacks match where it was New Zealand's power that got us. You know what I mean? It was their power and aggression and physicality at the breakdown that actually took us out of our stride. You know what I mean? It's not, New Zealand aren't like South Africa where we think it's only about physicality. But by Christ, did they bring physicality against us in the quarterfinal, and they rattled us. They rattled us. So that's my argument. I know it sounds so generic. But unfortunately, until we actually can handle teams like La Rochelle, and manage to not get beaten up to a certain extent, there has to be that doubt. Yeah.
Well, we discuss physicality battles in a rugby context, and I often think we're guilty of discussing them as being black or white, in that one team won the physicality battle and one team lost it. Whereas in reality, to me, it strikes as being more like, if you consider it like a 12-round slugfest in a boxing match, one guy can win 7-5. You know what I mean? And like, I would say the Leinster-La Rochelle games in recent years, absolutely La Rochelle have had that physical edge and they've won those knockout games. But like, as you say, Leinster could have won all of those games as well. Like, they've been very close. And that's where Nian Aber, arguably, whether it's through like the allocation of energy at key points of a game, or just having a little bit more in the final quarter, or even from a strategic standpoint, he could be the difference. You've made the point already, but like, he could be the guy to get you over the line. Just that little bit of South African shrewdness.
Yeah, 100%. I think he was the guy they needed. And effectively, they didn't need him to be top of the table in the URC. They could do that with Stewart. They could do that without Stewart. Like, that's just the reality of how loaded they are in terms of quality. But they need him to get him over the line in the Champions Cup. You know, they need him to get over the line in the Champions Cup. And it might be only 1%. But I think this, it comes down to this. And he could say, oh, it's early and he only came after the World Cup. It'll be next year before you see the best of him, etc. And I don't doubt that. But they really need him this weekend to give him the confidence. To give him the confidence that they can win and knock out rugby. And, you know, I'm not sure it was you or Murray said, oh, you know, they look comfortable against the Stormers, even though they were 16-0 down. At the end, they were obviously on their own line. They never really panicked. The South Africans had that ability as well, that, you know, they won obviously quarterfinal, semi-final, final, are winning by a point in each game, but yet you didn't ever see them, you never thought they were that close in terms of how they acted. So, and I think Leinster, to be fair, are getting practice at that to a certain extent, just by the nature of the fact their performances haven't been really convincing, that they've, you know, they went behind against Leicester, they went behind against the Bulls, and haven't really panicked, which is a good thing.
And in relation to Nian Aber, be handy not to concede 3 tries again, as they have in the last 2 finals.
Yeah.
And in both those finals, definitely won each of those trio of tries were just bad concessions at that level. If people go back to the highlights, they'll see there's one Rule scores in the first final. And last season, didn't Dante just kind of smash through Ringrose pretty straightforward? Gary, yeah. And that is power, obviously, but they're tries that you can't give up in games of that magnitude. So it's encouraging to have him in that regard. And the other thing, I suppose, on the other side of the ball is making sure like Jamison Gibson Park just gets that ball cleanly. The La Rochelle Jackal threats are coming. We know that Leinster are excellent usually around that attacking breakdown. And we can see that if he does get nice service and clean ball, Gibson Park is increasingly such a difference maker. I'm just loving seeing this guy's continued rise in confidence and influence on games, and maybe Sexton not being there, he's stepped that up even further. It's crazy to me to think that this guy was just Leinster's backup scrum half, and no one ever really used to talk about him that much. He qualified for Ireland before the 2019 World Cup, but like, no one was calling for him to go straight into the squad, or it wasn't even really a debate. And it took a while even for that, the Farrell era, for Farrell to realise actually this guy can be one of the very best, and that's what he is now. His decision making and speed of thought, and particularly his use of the short side, is, it's not unmatched, because there's another really good scrum half in Antoine Dupont, but he's really operating on a different level. He's seeing the game with amazing clarity. He's a brilliant defender with his speed. His support lines are great. He's worked really hard at his kicking, and yeah, he's a difference maker for them now. I thought in this game he was operating just a few gears ahead of everyone mentally.
in another era, he'd probably be the best scrum half in the Northern Hemisphere, at least, Birch. He's probably getting to a point where, say, Conor Murray was with his game around 2018. Different kinds of players, obviously, but just in terms of the regard in which he's held, he's the second best, obviously, because of the existence of Antoine Dupont. But in terms of Murray's point about his journey and the fact that there was a time when he was playing for Leinster where he was kind of an afterthought, like, it's an unbelievable example to any player, isn't it? The extent to which he has risen at, you know, like in a late stage of his career as well, to be in a conversation even with Dupont as being like one of the top two.
It's really rare to see a player go from being a very good pro to being like world class. And like, he was head and shoulders above anyone else on the pitch at the weekend. And you had World Cup winners like Andre Pollard, you know, Jasper Visa, Montoya, obviously, you know, brilliant hooker for Argentina, and some brilliant players on other players that he's playing with on the Leinster team. And yet he looked like he was playing at a different level. And that is so rare, but I think it's great because obviously he's honed his craft, his perception and his fitness levels, they're outstanding. And like, he makes the odd error, but I mean, he's getting so many touches, and the way he makes Leinster's attack tick is phenomenal. I mean, and you look back to that New Zealand game where he ended up on the wing, like, he actually was brilliant on the wing, you know. I know Dupont is a very good 10, but like, that takes some doing. There's not many nines who can be very good on a wing in a World Cup quarterfinal. If you're La Rochelle, you're saying stop him. And they haven't stopped him per se, but they've actually messed up Leinster's ruck ball to an incredible success where he can't play the high tempo game. And that's why the referee this weekend is going to be so important. And I'm not saying La Rochelle are illegal, but, you know, because Leinster have changed how they attack defensive breakdowns as well, and they don't fan out, they really go after and try and blast it. So that battle is going to be have a huge bearing on the game.
We're a good few days out at the moment, but let me ask you, Birch, without having access to the teams or anything like that, which way are you leaning as we record on Monday?
Leinster. I agree with you. I think everything makes sense for Leinster, but I don't think it's going to be. I think it's going to be incredibly tight, and they're going to have to close out or come from behind the last 10 minutes to win it. Massive pressure on selection is the key. It's like, this is a week. I said it was all about the players, but I think selection, you know, making a good call, making a call based on data, getting it right, getting that selection right from both teams. But Leicester's concentrate. If I think Leicester are going to win it, there's some big calls. No James Ryan, no Gary Ringrose, from what I understand. Like, they're big calls, and what do you do? You know, what do you do in the second row without James Ryan? You know, it's like, what do you do in the back row? I mean, you know, the front row picks itself, whatever. So it's Porter, Sheen, Furlong. If you want to have good lineup ball, you pick Ross. But is this the game to pick Ross when you want to match La Rochelle up front? Joe is an automatic, you would say, pick. But like, this was the game that Jason Jenkins was signed for. And, you know, in theory, this was the game that Jason Jenkins was signed for. He hasn't pulled up trees, you know what I mean? But he's an international rugby player. He has that profile that you would like picking a team for this game. Is this the one where you match Joe and Jenkins in the second row, and you go, you know, you're saying, right, we're going to have massive scrum power, we're going to have massive physicality, and we'll go short. Shorter in the lineouts, we'll take the ball to front, whatever, we'll throw to wherever Skelton is, and we'll win the ball. Like, that's, look, it probably won't happen, but when I'm thinking about where this game could be won or lost, I am thinking that selection is going to be a big factor in it. Is it Osborne and Robbie together? If Gary's out, you'd say probably yeah, because Charlie Nattoy is out. Wing Jordan doesn't convince me at the moment on the wing defensively. Again, is there a better defender there? Yeah, so they're like, I think that's going to be interesting. Can he get Luke McGrath back to be on the bench? Obviously, he got a head knock, you know, big ask for Ben Murphy with the limited experience he has to have to maybe come on in this. So there's a big pressure on Leo to get the selection right, and they might have to be brave, or maybe they're risk averse and it's good enough anyway. I don't know, but I do think potentially that second row partnership with James Ryan being out, you know, they've got to be physical. They've got to be incredibly physical, and yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, Bert, but just on that, you do have the option of, like, sorry, you have two more good and decent line-out options, even if you go with the two big boys at lock, in that you have...
Sorry, I didn't finish it. Yeah, I didn't finish it. Sorry, my back row selection was that you don't pick Josh, and you go Ryan, Kalen, and Jack. You know what I mean? And again, maybe I'm getting obsessed about Larry Shell's size, and Leinster should go, we're just going to do what we do. That hasn't worked. That hasn't worked up to now. And maybe it'll work now because they're a year older and blah, blah, blah. But I just think that that's the fascinating area this weekend around selection. And it goes back to that final last year. I don't know if you remember, but Dante had a suspension. And Dante came back and was useless. I think it was against Montpellier in the game before. And the fellow who'd been playing in this place, I can't remember his name, was actually going really well and got La Rochelle to the final. And Rog said he had a couple of sleepless nights about selection because you're basically picking a fellow who isn't in form, come back from suspension, over a guy who's been excellent. But he picked Dante, and Dante delivered. You know what I mean? And like up to now, that's been the difference between the teams. Has been effectively one good selection or one player coming off the bench and having the impact that's desired. So I think that's going to be fascinating. I don't know if Leinster will be. Will be scared by La Rochelle and pick their team to attack that. But sorry, I'm not saying they won't be. I don't know if they'll adapt their selection for La Rochelle, but I think it's definitely worth considering.
Do you think, though, there is the option to start with McCarthy and Jenkins in the event that you go with Baird and Doris in your back row? Because Baird and Doris are two line-out options as well. That's what I'm asking. Like, yeah, maybe you do bulk up at lock and you're sacrificing Maloney, who's your best line-out operator and probably calls a line-out if he's there in Ryan's absence, but you do have other options.
Yeah, I do. And I think the fact that Baird has been self-professed line-out geek, which he wasn't initially, and he's trying to add that to his repertoire. I think he can. You know, they know better. Like, Leo will know if he's ready for it or not, but I think he can.
Murray, I'll ask you later in the week what you reckon, predictions-wise, because we want to chat about Connacht and Ulster as well. Let's start with Ulster's win over Montpellier, Murray. And the brass tacks of it is they were 14-0 down in this game, and it felt probably a little bit familiar, and you're kind of thinking, Jesus, like, if you're an Ulster fan, you just want the season to end. It winds up in this resounding victory away in France. You're into a Challenge Cup quarter-final, and then... there's a case to be made that there actually might be an exciting finish to Ulster's season.
Totally. Like, this is just the boost and the bounce and the injection that we were talking about them really needing and that Richie Murphy was looking for. And yeah, they went down early on in this game. I thought they actually looked quite calm, and I think they really sensed their opportunity. It wasn't, as Bernard mentioned earlier on, it wasn't a big crowd there, and it was a Montpellier team that had quite a few changes in it, but still size and mass and power, and that was the concern. But they were well in the fight, and then Paul Willems seems to be a trend now, gets the red card, and it definitely is a big moment in the game. I know Ulster had scored before that when Balakoon made that bust and Addison finishes, but it was a big boost for Ulster, and they took full advantage. They were pretty ruthless with it, and I know they scored a couple of late tries to put even more gloss on the scoreline, but they did take control and they looked measured. And I think there was a renewed energy to it. I actually thought Nathan Doak did well at 10, showed a few more promising signs there for me. I thought Balakoon looked more like the explosive, quick athlete that he can be. I thought David McCann, who I think has been a real success story this season in becoming an important player for this team, I thought he had another excellent game, and he looks like he's going to be an essential figure in this rebuild, and that he's a guy to kind of build around. Apparently he's a really strong character as well, and very confident guy, and wants to be a leader despite his relative youth. He's been excellent all season. So I think there was loads of encouragement in it. Yeah, I'm probably measured as well. I don't mean to completely diminish the Challenge Cup, but it's certainly not at the level of Champions Cup, which I think Ulster should be aspiring to. But right now they're in the Challenge Cup. They've got a chance now to win a trophy, and they clearly are going to go all out for that. Got to go to France again next weekend. They're going to have a tough draw the whole way through, but yeah, it's not far off getting a trophy that could be a massive game changer, really, for the province. Just to finish the season with a high, and to taste that bit of happiness and joy in rugby when it's been a bit of a torrid kind of time for them in the last few months, and there's been a negative atmosphere around it. So this was a much more welcome sight for Ulster and for their fans.
Clermont are in a similar boat, Birch, to Leon. I think they're level on points in the top 14 table, in that they're looking over their shoulders a little bit. Do you see this as another opportunity for Ulster, who want silverware ultimately, to go and do a job of them?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, I think Clermont, now it's a quarter final, their fans are a bit more loyal than Montpellier's. They may actually see this as a chance to turn their season turn next season around on the back of a trophy. They've always been respectful to Europe, whereas Montpellier and Pau, etc., haven't. So I think it'll be a bigger challenge. I didn't think Ulster were brilliant. You know, Montpellier were there for the taking, but I'm not surprised, because they're a team who are obviously low on confidence, so they will get a lot of belief from that. And yeah, I wouldn't be overly shocked if they won, but they're going to have to step it up to another level. But I do think a Challenge Cup final or a win for them would be brilliant. You know, it's been tough for them, and obviously, I'm not sure how lucrative it would be, but it would bring some needed funds into their coffers.
Yeah, I guess the flip side of the argument from Clermont's point of view is that there's a Challenge Cup there to be won for them as well, and it's a backdoor into the totally. Champions Cup, which they would very much appreciate when they're not going to make it through their league table. That's going to be a really fun game, you'd imagine. You mentioned, Birch, that Poe don't necessarily take European competitions that seriously. It's not a priority for them at the moment, and that was the case with their team selection against Connacht. But I still looked at their team and thought, can this team beat Connacht? Yes. So, like, that's where I was impressed by Connacht, just going and getting the job done in the end. They made it difficult for themselves at times, but that felt like a must-win game for them. Whereas I think if Ulster had gone and lost to Montpellier, you're still very early into a new coach's reign. I'm not sure that Connacht could afford to lose that game, actually, in any context. So for that reason, I was just delighted to see them do it.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, I was actually impressed with them, how they closed out the game and how they defended. And look at it's a bit ridiculous praising the team's defence when you can see 30 and some of their tries were quite soft. But at the end, when they needed to not give away a penalty, which would have made it a draw, when they needed to protect their try line, I thought the likes of Prendergast and Seamus Hurley-Langton in particular really stood up, and they actually looked very comfortable in how they were trying to defend. So I think for Scott Farrelly, he'll take big pride from that, because let's be honest, against Treviso, they should have won the game, but a poor defensive moment cost them, and obviously the Lions was terrible. So that's a big one for them. You'd see them after the match, they really obviously wanted to do something in this. And you know, the draw is not bad for them. To go to Treviso is easier than going to Clermont, I think. And even though Treviso have obviously having a decent year in the URC, etc., but they would fancy their chances. I thought JJ had a big impact coming on, and that's the only thing I would worry about Connacht, is I'm not really sure who the number 110 is at the moment.
It's JJ.
Yeah, it is JJ, you would think, but he certainly did have an impact on the game. Prendergast was outstanding. Scrummaging wise, they were fine, but look at the Poe weren't really at the, you know, they weren't desperate to win it, and they're having a very good season in France in the top 14. So interesting project. Poe is very similar to Clermont. So Clermont and Poe are kind of similar in that they're backed by the biggest employer in the locality. So Clermont's built on Michelin and the Michelin factory and the Michelin board and all that stuff, and having the crossover business acumen into the rugby. And Poe are around Total, the petroleum company. And their model has been, you know, if you remember a couple of years ago, they signed Colin Slade and Conrad Smith, and Conrad Smith was doing a bit of recruitment for them then, so they've got Whitelock now. So they're kind of they're going out, they've really tapped into the All Blacks, and it's a well-run club, which is financially like built, improved the stadium. It's a lovely stadium now. Get big crowds, really hard place to go in the top 14. But you saw last night, Sunday match against Connacht, you know, the fans just had no interest in it, and think that that passed over to the players, to be fair.
They had a lot of interest in Bundy Aki, those who did attend. There was a lovely video uploaded by Megan, one of our subscribers, of the Poe fans flocking to get his autograph and selfies and things like that. I don't even know if people get autographs anymore, you know what I mean. It is a pretty interesting quarterfinal for Connacht Murray, just in the sense that they're playing Benetton Intraviso again so soon after the last one, and so soon after a game that they probably, well, they feel as though they should have won. Do you fancy them? I certainly do. I think they'll go there and do the job this time.
They look like they mean business. We spoke about it on Friday when we saw that team selection, Gav. It was just all their aces. They, I suppose, used Bundy Aki and Finley Beelam's availability for this one. And it made sense once you saw the steely determination from them straight away in this game when Heffernan goes over for the maul try. And yeah, they had some tough moments. But I think Birch is so right. They finished strongly and JJ had that good impact after Cardi had an influence in getting them into a good position. So it looks like they're just going all out. Benetton are a good team. They are. And they'll have absolutely got their own ambitions in this competition as their kind of rise continues. But it's winnable for Connacht. And I think it'll be brilliant. I saw some of the stuff from fans who made that journey over. Fair play. Not easy to get there. But how class would it be for them to have a kind of cup run now and maybe come out with silver? Ulster and Connacht can actually meet in the final in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on the Friday, is it the 24th of May, which will be pretty cool. It'll be really cool to see it happen. A couple of hurdles before that, but Connacht definitely look like they mean business.
Yeah, those Connacht fans who travelled over deserve credit. Like, it's rare that you'd see away fans have a material impact on the outcome of a game, but they were so audible in such a relatively empty stadium. I genuinely think they gave the team a couple of percent there when things got tough. So fair play to them. I hope they had a great night last night as well. Let's leave it here for now, boys. Murray, thanks a mil as always. Great to see you.
Thanks, lads.
Birch, same to you. Appreciate you. Thanks everyone at home as well for your continued support. We'll be back again midweek. Find yourselves in the meantime.
But the boys in a better land. You're always talking about the boys in a better land. The boys in a better land. Drivers got names for 52 double barrels. He spits out.